welcome to another episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I am your host, Lindsay Recknell, and it is my pleasure to have Maura Cleary here with me today. Hello, Maura.
Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
I am doing so well. I was so looking forward to this conversation. I loved, you know, we connected a few weeks ago, maybe, and you told me a little bit about your story, and I'm really excited for people to hear more of your brilliance.
Well, thank you. I'm just excited to be here. I've listened to your show and I always walk away with something. So hopefully there's somebody out there that walks away from this with something.
I totally believe that they will. Let me tell everybody a little bit more about you on a formal level, and then I'll pass it over to you and have you share your story with us.
Sure.
So Maura Cleary is a professionally certified coach, a Reiki master, and a mom of two daughters with 15 plus conditions. Through her help, her holistic approach, Maura helps moms of kids with medical and special needs when they find themselves literally or figuratively in the waiting room. She basically helps them with their stuff so that they can help their kids with their stuff. When not coaching, she tries to be a resource for others by hosting the Surviving the Waiting Room podcast, a virtual wellness center, as well as the latest edition of the Parent and Caregiver Summit. That is incredibly amazing, compassionate work that you do.
And I love every bit of it. If you told me a few years ago this is what I would be doing, I would think you're crazy. I've got no time for that.
Amazing. Well, tell us a little more about your journey and how you have got to this place from where you started.
Sure, absolutely. You know, the journey is always long. So we're just going to truncate it a few years. When my girls really began entering puberty, like around middle school time, they started having all these weird conditions. And we had gone to doctors for years and we had brought up these different symptoms. And they always said that, oh, that's just normal. That's just the way you're made. And honestly, that was a story that I heard my entire life. You know, you're Irish. That's just the way you're made. You're normal. Which is pretty much what every parent wants to hear, right? But the problem is when it becomes too often. And that's the story of my daughters. So one daughter has debilitating anxiety when she was middle school. And we wondered how we were going to get her off to college, how she was going to do that. And so we took the steps we needed to ensure that was going to happen. Our other daughter, when she entered middle school, she started with chronic migraines and she would miss like 10 days out of the month. In fact, her classmates thought she had brain cancer because she was out of school so frequently. And we're still working on that. She has now had chronic migraines her entire life since she's now a senior in high school. But the real, that was like the nice part, like one would have something and then the other one would. And we could balance that because, you know, there's two parents in our house and we could easily do that. Unfortunately, the symptoms got worse. The problems got worse. And then when our oldest was entering into her senior year, just a month before school started, she collapsed like a rag doll. And everything in our house went into chaos. We went to all these different specialists. We had all these different blood draws. Nobody could find any answers. And that's always like a blessing and a curse, you know, when you can't find the answers. Long story short, we were able to diagnose her with ME/CFS, that's chronic fatigue syndrome, within 3 months. Normally it takes 6 months under the diagnosis. And that one condition triggered 5 or 6 other conditions in her body. And at the same time, we were still having issues with our younger daughter. She was having issues with her joints and with her migraines. And we finally found a geneticist who was like, welcoming us in. And she's like, I see girls like you every day. You are normal, but to me. And it was like, I swear, like all three of us were about to cry that we finally found somebody who would listen and knew the answer. It wasn't like, just drink more water. If I had heard your girls need to drink more water, I think I'd like shoot myself. But it was a long journey. So it was over 3 years of, I had to pull back from my business. I had to pull back from coaching. I never knew when the, school was going to call. I tried yoga for a while. I couldn't do that because I was pulled out for an emergency. And you know, my life was literally, I realized that even when I wasn't in a doctor's office, I was always sitting in a waiting room. I was always waiting for something to give me space so that I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I don't have that. And I still speak to a lot of women today, in fact, today, saying she didn't have that space. She's not had one day to herself to even think straight. So when I finally got healthy, I basically drew a line in the sand and said, we're going to figure this out. Like, enough of just listening and doctors, let's go to a doctors that actually can help us. So the May, so that was summer before my daughter was diagnosed. The May of her graduation, we got to go see a specialist in New York City, and we're from Georgia. So it was quite the trip, but she was able to properly diagnose my daughter, know why it was probably triggered, give her proper medications and supplements. And my daughter, who had been using a wheelchair off and on the entire year, was able to walk down her graduation. And I still can't tell a story. I've told it so many times and I still get choked up because it was amazing to me. We had a wheelchair in the car in case she needed it. And she didn't. It was miraculous. And then our younger daughter, she got a new treatment for her migraines and she was able to go to school full time and always be caught up. So with that breathing space, I started asking, like, do other people need coaches? Because I had finally gotten a coach for myself and she was awesome. She's a good friend of mine. She's very skilled. Clearly she's very skilled. But I realized that she didn't have kids of her own. So she couldn't relate on that level. And that means that she didn't understand what it meant to care for kids with chronic illness when they were going through school, when they were growing up. And that part was lacking. That's the part that I wish that she could have. And I didn't know of any other coaches out there that did this. So I started asking around. Like I said, I put out a survey and I got hundreds of responses back of yes, you know, of all these and the amount of vulnerability that these parents and these caregivers were telling me about how they needed help and why they needed it was just overwhelming. So within 6 months, I knew that coaching alone wasn't what people needed. And wouldn't it be nice to have everything in one place? We didn't have to go searching the internet for all the answers and who could help us. So that's when I put together the summit. And and that's history. So somehow I find time to do it all. And along the same lines, you know, for the people out there that say, oh, I don't have time for that, I am totally on board with that answer. I had a little more space in my life because my kids had gotten to that plateau. And also I had other women that I could see in the same space that had kids with more profound issues, that were having podcasts, that were able to juggle things, that were getting respite care, that were doing things. And I thought, if they could do it, I surely could do the same thing. And why not just try? And so that was really it. This whole thing has really just been one huge experiment. Yeah.
Oh, there is so many things I want to say in response to that story, I have to tell you. The first of which is just the hope embedded in almost every step of that journey. I mean, from first off, your kids having their symptoms and you thinking there has to be something here. Like, I know they're normal, but this is not normal behavior.
Right.
This is not normal symptoms. Like, you know, just the persistence, the tenacity, the you showing that behavior out loud, because I'm sure your kids were exhausted. I mean, one is diagnosed chronic exhaustion, but just mentally and physically to go again, to get up and go again. Like, amazing. All of the other stuff aside, just to even start with that tenacity piece. Like, is tenacity a character trait you knew you had in spades?
Honestly, yeah. It's funny that you say that, because no, that would not be. It's just basically keep on moving. Keep on like our end goal. So my husband and I have always seen it that our job is to get them to graduate so that they can do whatever they want in life. And if we let them give in, if we didn't give them the opportunities to go see the doctors or get the medications, that wouldn't happen. And sure, there's lots of days that they wanted to give up. And I just wouldn't have it because they were not going to live in my house the rest of their lives.
Also,
you know, but you know, they need to grow. They needed to have adulthood. And, I, like I said, I don't think I said this before, but I had an undiagnosed autoimmune disease for 38 years. And I always thought like life has to be better than this. Like I, just because I'm Irish doesn't mean I have to feel like this way. Just, you know, there should be something better than this. So I was already asking myself that question. I'd already been helping myself with those questions. So when my daughters started having similar conditions and similar symptoms, I was like, there has to be something, there has to be an answer. If we can get an answer, then we could get a plan. And if we could get a plan, then we could move forward. And if we can move forward, then, you know, life might not be exactly how we expected it to be. You know, we might be really fearful a lot of the times and hold our breaths, but you have to try it. And that's pretty much how I run my coaching business too. So yeah.
Oh, amazing. I mean, you just, in your words, you shared my definition of hope. I mean, the definition of hope is very different for a lot of people, but for me, it's that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And your language there was just about focusing on what you can control, which are the symptoms, and your actions towards figuring out what is going on and getting up and going again and trying the next thing to get you towards that future better than today, which may or may not look like your, you know, perfect dream vision, but it's got to be better than it is today.
Exactly.
You know, also imagine being diagnosed based on your heritage. Like that is a very broad paint, broad brush strokes to paint on an entire culture of Irish people.
Exactly. And it's something that I heard my entire life. And then, like I said, I started hearing my doctor saying it to my kids and I'm like, oh my gosh,
that can't possibly be a thing. Amazing.
It might just be because my culture actually has this autoimmune disease more frequently than other cultures. Like anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So tell me more about, as a mother, I don't have kids, so I'm presuming, but as a mom, you're trying to set your kids up for this foundation. And you said you're trying to get them to graduate so they don't live with you for the rest of their lives. How do you also balance that sort of normal parenthood stuff, the teaching, the growing, the laying the foundation stuff, with also layering on the compassion and curiosity for, you know, extenuating circumstances and special situations for your kids? Is there a balance that has to be made there?
Every day we question ourselves, like, are we doing it this way? Like, well, they're not really doing that. I'm like, well, we kind of got to give them a break with that because they kind of like are doing this. So yeah, you kind of do, all, at least I do, I question and rethink how you're doing things. I definitely see a difference between both of my daughters, the older one clearly being diagnosed with the most severe conditions just months before she needs to go off to school. So at the point in time, she was taking over 20 pills 3 times a day. That is not something any college student wants to do. So she needed to learn the repercussions of not taking 20 pills 3 times a day. And we needed to sit back just like any parents would do and watch their kid, you know, skin their knee and figure out how they want to do, how they want to keep on moving. So with her, we didn't have the opportunity to really help her with balancing her medication, her medical side and her academic side. So it's really been learning along the way. And then COVID, you know, has come in and taught us something all new anyway. But it's interesting because this semester, she's been back for about a week and a half and she's already growing. Like she's already finally catching on to what this all means and how to care for herself and how to live a life. So it's nice to see that maturity there. And my younger daughter, you know, she's pretty much had the same routine since she was in sixth grade. So to her, it's a routine. And, you know, there's still that give and take, you know, when chores need to be done and they can't be done. So, you know, that's really where we work with her on that stuff. But I was just sitting, she's going to college next year. I'm like, what does she need to know before she goes? Like, what do I need to prep her for?
It feels very intentional. A lot of what you do and how you live and how you parent feels intentional. Would you describe it that way?
I think so. I, you know, in fact, every morning, like if they have a rough morning, I'm like, well, what's your intention for the day? Set your intention. Like, how do you want to be? Choose how you're going to show up in the world. And that's pretty much, how I've learned to start living my life of choosing how I want to show up in the world and how I want to be that day. And it helps me through, you know, the really rough days, because we all have those days that we're grieving or we're upset or we're just in a funk. And are we going to allow ourselves to stay that way? Sometimes the answer is yes. But too many yeses means you get to make a change. And so that's when I start giving little nudges.
I like that. Too many yeses and you realize you got to make a change. I'm a huge fan of insightful questions like that. Is that something you must use that in your coaching? Do you?
It might just be an observation. I don't know if I've ever actually said that out loud, but yes, it's always in my head. Like, okay, we've given you some slack. You've pity party a little bit. Now it's time to start seeing what we can do. Yeah.
It's funny you use that language, pity party. I remember, 25 years ago, I got laid off from a job and I was devastated. I was young. It was my first fancy, like I felt really important at that job and I got laid off and I was miserable. And my dad says to me, no, like feel it, take it in.
Yeah.
Hang out at this party, throw yourself a pity party. Just don't stay too long. Like don't be an uninvited guest.
Exactly.
But it's true, right? We know we're taught to, well, we should be taught, I think, to feel these things and live them. Just don't stay there. Once it's time, continue moving through to the other side so that you can get back on the proverbial horse and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Keep taking that action, right? The uncomfortable times, the trauma builds resilience when you come out the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. Tell me, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? It's whenever I see that that spark of inspiration from somebody else. You know, that unexpected pride where they're just kind of taking back their power and, you know, moving forward when it's clearly a new experience for them. Like, I mean, I'm thinking about when my girls do it. I'm thinking about when I do it. I think about when clients do it. Like, it just inspires me. And it just builds that feeling. Yeah.
What do you tell the clients that you're working with, the parents that you're working with that are in similar scenarios that you were in maybe, 3 or 4 years ago? And they're sort of where you're at now going, I'm not going to make it. What do I do here? I'm in this waiting room forever. How do you inspire hope in them that it's not always going to be this way?
Yeah, it's funny because ever since I actually started listening to your podcast, the way you define hope, like if you just put the word faith instead of hope, that's every time you say hope, I just think faith. Because for me, there is a religious form of faith, but then there is, or spiritual. But to me, it's having faith in yourself and pulling back that power and reclaiming it for yourself, not giving it away. And that's, we're kind of forced to give it away. You know, we give it away to our kids who need us, to things that are out of our control, to, we don't have space to wrap our heads around things. So I have actually a framework around faith too. And it's just about feeling, like feel the feels, as you said, right? So feel the feels and then really think of and sit with how are you accustomed to thinking about it? You know, it's easy enough to say like, I was taught this or taught that, but no, what are you accustomed to thinking about it? And then do you still believe it? Is it true? And like questioning that and questioning yourself. And that's a lot. That's really hard for people. You know, because when you've been thinking something or believing something for so long, you got to question yourself. And was I right? Was I wrong? Did I make decisions? So that's the F and the A. And then the I is what do you imagine? Like, what would the world be like? Thinking crazy. Like, it's kind of like that hope part. Like, what do you hope for out of this whole thing? Let's just think of that. And then, what steps do you need to take? What's a baby step? And it's really just walking them through this process, whether it's like on a big scale or whether it's on a small issue that they're having that they just can't get past or they're grieving with, and then helping them know that they can have a go at it and they can give it a try and see what might need to get adjusted and what might not. But knowing that there's somebody there with them and hearing themselves say the words as they're walking through the process is just so empowering. And it often brings them to tears. It brings me to tears because they finally see that, you know, they have a life and they have a voice, and they don't have to live for their kids, but they can live and inspire their kids. And so that's what we really work with on a lot.
Oh, that feels goosebumpy. I mean, I don't even have kids and that feels goosebumpy to me, because I think it's a scenario that a lot of, I'm using caregivers in quotes, but right, people who care for others, right? Whether it's in a parent situation, whether it's in a kind of a codependent situation, or, you know, a leader who really cares deeply about their people, right? People pleasers tend to give it away more often than they take care of themselves. And I like what you said about that empowerment to take that back, to realize that no, you get to be you as someone who cares for other people, but that doesn't diminish who you are as a human, as a woman, as a man, as an anyone. And that would be very powerful, kind of watching that transformation in people.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, that it's really about the caregiver. It's the person that is enveloping. And so often we see it that the way that they view the world is the world is this bubble in front of them that they're caring for, and they're standing on the outside. And they forget that they are actually inside the bubble too, that they are part of the world. And it's not, you know, everybody else that they have to hug and care for, but they're inside of there too. So,
you know, that word self-care is getting better. The stigma around the world, the language of self-care, I feel like is moving in a positive direction. You know, we don't just talk about it with rolled eyes and bubble baths and candles anymore.
Right.
But does that must come up in your practice as well, because we're not great at putting ourselves first. And especially if we're caring for others who have, you know, seemingly stronger physical needs or mental needs than we feel like we ourselves do. How do you help people kind of overcome that mental barrier that they do get to put themselves first, that can be a thing that is in fact the least selfish that they can be?
That's actually one of the scariest things out there. It is so scary to relinquish control and take care of themselves, like step back from that. And that right there, that word control, is usually the first thing that we need to cover. Because if you can ask, like I would say, most people I ask, talk to them, they need to control the entire situation. Because if a ball is dropped when they're not in control, then the guilt will set in, then everything else will set in. So we just talk about baby steps, you know, what's something that you can do to help them, help somebody else so that you can be away for 5 minutes or you can be away for 10 minutes. And it's just about learning and building that muscle of letting go of control of the situation, of whatever it is, the person you're caring for, and then seeing that you have a little bit of space to start caring for yourself or doing some, I don't really actually usually say caring or self-care, but we talk about, what do you want to do? What do you need right now? What would help you? And so then we start doing that, and we start having those conversations, and it's all about self-care, but I never use that word because to them, that might not be what's helpful to them. To them, it might be, I can sit down with a cup of tea and on my back deck and just enjoy it. And that's all I need. And so it's really using the language and taking those baby steps.
Baby steps that build that confidence, right? If you can do one small thing, you feel like, okay, well, I didn't think I could do that, but I did
right.
it, so I must be able to do the next thing.
Build that muscle. You can't just like go away in a three-day tour and think that you're going to be able to leave everything behind. You can't. I mean, you could, but I'm sure you'll be on the phone, you'll be worrying, and you won't be able to separate yourself from that. So let's start building that muscle now. Let's start, you know, building those things.
Just creating that space. I like that language that you use, just creating that space to be. It feels like just creating a space to be. So I started this podcast and I started this work in hope. It comes from a very personal journey as well. And it was a caregiving journey. And I realized through the journey of mental health and addiction that we were going through, that I lost myself in the process as well. So it's what you're saying is resonating very, very strongly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I struggled with in doing this work and telling my story, because I want, you know, I want people to hear my story so that maybe they can be inspired, you know, the same way I love to have you tell your story so other people can resonate and, you know, and be inspired to make change or to feel better or to feel like they're not alone. But one of the things that I struggle with is telling my story without sharing the story of those involved as well, because I truly believe, and I know that you do as well, that that's their story to tell. And I know you mentioned in some of our prep work for this call that you have permission from your daughters to tell your part of their story. Could you share a little bit about that? Just, you know, kind of conversations that you might've had with them or anything like that, because there's probably others in this similar scenario that may want to share what they've learned through their journey, but are unsure of where those lines might be.
Sure. Yeah. As I was going through this, as I was coming out of my, you know, my tailspin days, I started writing a blog and I was telling my story of having an autoimmune disease. And clearly it impacted the way I was brought up. So maybe family members were in there. But I never said anything about them. It was all from my perspective because I didn't want to, everybody does the best they can. It was not a blast on anybody else. It was just what I was experiencing. And then a friend of mine was saying, okay, you know, you really just need to start a podcast. Like you're just done. We just no more blogging, just podcast. And so Surviving the Waiting Room had come out. And I asked my daughters, I said, well, you know, they said, well, what's it going to be about? And so I said, you know, the coaching perspective of having kids with chronic illness. And I said, but I'm going to say it just from my perspective. And I told them that because I didn't want to put them on the spot and ask them. And they said, good, because you're okay saying it from your perspective, but you're not allowed to tell our stories. And a lot of it was social media too, because, you know, they're teenagers, they're going to college. They didn't want people to know their stories. They didn't want, you know, classmates to find out their names. They didn't want any of that. And I really respected that. And I still do. I still have to ask for permission if they're going to be on any social media, which is why they're on no social media. I think you might have caught one post somewhere. I'm lucky that I even have it on my website because they're like, we don't want our pictures anywhere. But it's interesting. So this year I said, you know, sometimes it's difficult when I try to explain something when people don't know what conditions you have. You know, am I allowed to say your conditions now? And they had to think about it. And then they said, okay, yeah, it's fine. You can say our conditions.
But it's cool. Like the communication that you have with them and their openness to share, you know, a little bit and a little bit more, maybe as they get more mature along the way as well. And I'm a huge believer that, you know, fears are louder in the dark. And when we talk about these things, then other people maybe feel that empowerment to be able to share what's going on in their mind and or get the help that they need as well. And I think, you know, you're modeling this behavior out loud. Your kids are modeling behavior for their peers and for, you know, the kids of the clients that you work with and things like that. And I think that is very, very cool. I mean, that is very hopeful. That is very hopeful.
Yeah. And they understand that, you know, when you're vulnerable and you can share these things, it lets other people know that it's not so crazy. Like what they're going through, that somebody else has gone through it too.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important to start sharing those pieces of the puzzle.
That's amazing. Well, this has been an absolutely incredible conversation. If you can believe that we are at the end of our time together.
My gosh.
Right? And I messed up earlier. I meant to ask you a different question. And I asked you the question that I ask everybody at the end, but I'm going to ask it again and have you summarize it. Have you summarize your thoughts here? Because I know people love to hear it at the very, very end. And that is, Maura, what gives you hope?
If only I could remember what I said in the beginning of the show.
There's lots of things, you know, you could share lots of things.
But I do believe this is probably the gist is that I just love seeing the spark in people. I love it when they have those moments where they stretch themselves, where it's not always comfortable and they, it just basically inspire me when I see other people's sparks and that really gives me hope. It inspires me to be better. It inspires me to show up. And I think when people have that, they should just grab it with two hands and just see wherever it takes them.
See, that was even better than the first answer. Because transformation is totally beautiful. It is a gorgeous, messy, phenomenally goosebump-making time, you know? And it's very, very cool. And it feels very, very hopeful. You are very, very hopeful. This conversation has made me feel so inspired. Thank you for sharing your story. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me. I hope we stay in touch because I feel the same way about you.
Oh, you're not getting rid of me that easily. Don't you worry. Thanks very much. Take care. I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. These episodes are a labor of love. Inspiring conversations with hopeful people make my heart happy. If you also love this episode, it would be amazing if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. 5 stars if you're into it. It's these reviews that encourage Apple to promote this podcast to their network. And the more people that listen, the more hope we can spread into the world. Don't forget to check out the show notes of this episode to find all the links to my guests, books, and other resources referenced in this episode. You'll also find the link back to my website where you will find additional support and resources for you, your team, and your community. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And hearing from these guests on these episodes, I know that even more hopeful future is totally possible. I'm always looking for inspirational guests, so if you or anyone you know would like to be a guest on the show, please reach out. You can find me on the contact form of my website at expertinhope.com or by email at lindsay@expertinhope.com. When I was a teenager and my sisters were leaving the house to go out for the night, I always made it a point to remind them to call me if they need me. It was my way to tell them that I cared and would always be there for them. I'd love you to know the same, so all of you listening out there, call me if you need me. Again, thank you for your love and support of this podcast, my work in hope, and your intentional focus on making your future better than today. After all, hope without action is just a wish.